This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Super Tuesday's election results represented a chance for a much broader swath of the American electorate to make some choices for the Democratic presidential primary. Bernie Sanders came home a winner for states like California, but Joe Biden roared back with victories in South Carolina and Virginia, states where a significant part of his party's electorate is black voters. Michigan's primary, and perhaps indeed this year's presidential contest, might turn on some of the same issues motivating African-American voters in other parts of the country. We were intrigued by a recent article by Michael Harriet published in The Root, assessing the major candidates' agendas and records with respect to the issues black voters care about. Michael Harriet joins us now. Michael, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Given all the research you've done into the Democratic candidates' stances and what you know of the states that were voting yesterday, were you surprised by last night's results?
I think I was surprised, not because of the research I'd done. I think the polls and the political narratives made the results surprising, because I think we expected at least a closer contest in the states in the South. And I think very few people expected such a rousing victory by Joe Biden. So I think the results were surprising to most people, but not because of the issues.
You took on this article in the interest of finding out more about not just what the conventional wisdom is about the various Democratic candidates for president, but actually how the things that they say and the things that they have done might play with respect to African-American voters' interests. I mean, let's break this down a little bit. Like you say, we're not talking about a monolithic vote here. Yeah. What kinds of things were on your mind when you first took this on with respect to differences between older voters and younger voters, urban, suburban, and rural voters, that you kind of had to keep all these different bases covered?
I wasn't necessarily looking at the candidates. I was looking at the candidates' written policy, right? So, you know, the overwhelming, as you said, the narrative around the candidates wasn't as important as what they had written and explicitly said that they would do. And I wanted to dive into that, because there's always this overwhelming argument about, you know, what these candidates stand for, what they've actually said, what they've actually done. So I decided to look at their platforms and their policy to see and see how that fit with the wishes of Black America in the things that they were looking for candidates.
Give us a quick rundown on the methodology for this, what you were looking at the candidates based on and who you asked to help review all this.
Okay, so what we did is we broke the first three categories: education, politics, and economics. Right? We just didn't want to look at the political written policy. What we also did is, does it align with the things he's done in his past? We wanted to know, does it align with, you know, does it seem intentional? Does it, how detailed is it? How comprehensive is it, right? And most importantly, can these ideas be passed? Can they come to reality, right? So we took all of that, and I used probably about 17 Black political pundits, reporters, different policy wonks, and, you know, they helped me come up with this matrix, and we downloaded all of the candidates' campaign materials, waded through each of them, and it took a long time. It was surprisingly a lot of material to wade through. And then we graded each one on how do you feel about economics? How do you feel about what do they say about education and education disparities? What are they going to do about voter suppression and representation? And then how likely are they to get it passed? Do they have the skill to get it passed? Do they have the legislative experience to get it passed? How intentional have they been in the past about catering or showing Black issues or highlighting Black issues, or is it just performative, right? So we took all of these things, we graded them 1 through 10 on each different category, and we came up with a score.
Do you mind just summarizing for us who was at the top of the rankings?
Okay. So number one, we had Elizabeth Warren because and the reason why Elizabeth Warren scored so high is not just because her policies were so aligned with what black people look for in a candidate, but because they were so detailed. She didn't just say, I am going to do this thing. She said, I am going to do this thing. This is how I'm doing it. And you can even look at the draft legislation on how I propose to do it, right? So she was number one. Number two was Joe Biden. Now, Joe Biden, while many people consider him a moderate, right, one of the things that got him such a high score was that he just has years of experience, right? So he proposed ideas that were pretty moderate. They weren't groundbreaking, right? But he has he proposed specific legislation, and he even showed, hey, look, I got this done in the past. And not only that, right, he has the experience we know. Like, there might not be another presidential candidate in history with as much legislative experience in passing laws, no matter which party is in power, than Joe Biden.
This is someone who has a long record in both the House and the Senate, in addition to being vice president.
Right, right. And, you know, like, when we talk about things like health care, he was in the administration that got it done, right? When you talk about, income disparity, his was the first administration in 40 years that brought down the income disparity by taxing the wealthy and lessening taxes on the poor. So that's why he scored so high.
The third person on your list was someone who I think might surprise some people reading the article, Pete Buttigieg, who's now out of the race. And he was a candidate who actually drew a fair amount of suspicion from black voters, at least in terms of, you know, the public discourse, in his record as South Bend mayor. What did you conclude about where he stands in terms of policy?
So we factored in Pete Buttigieg's past. As you probably know, I've done a lot of reporting on Pete Buttigieg. Not much of it was positive, right? But and it surprised me when I looked specifically at what he called his Douglas Plan for Black America. It was surprisingly detailed, and it showed a level of rigor and intense understanding of issues that face African American communities that was surprisingly deep. And it wasn't just wide, it was deep. And so, you know, objectively, I had to factor that in. You know, I also factored in his past and the complaints about, you know, from African-Americans in the city that he served. But looking at his agenda, right, I had to give him credit that he at least had people who seemed to understand these issues and incorporated so many disparate ideas into his agenda, and then it was detailed. So, I was as surprised as you. But, you know, I had to give him credit.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Harriott. He's a writer based in Alabama, and he recently published an article in The Root that rates Democratic contenders for president with respect to issues of interest in the black community. You know, let's move on to talk about Bernie Sanders. We should definitely speak about his campaign's interactions with black voters. But first of all, how did you find what he had to offer in terms of policy?
You know, Bernie Sanders' plan is another one that surprised me because it had a shocking lack of detail. Right? Like, his education plan was basically like, I am going to make sure discrimination ends. You know, and he didn't spell out specifically, especially when compared with people like Warren or Biden or even Buttigieg, how he planned to do this. You know, he would say, I'm going to increase Title I funding, which is the fund that goes to disproportionately poor and minority schools. He didn't say how much it was. He just said he was going to increase funding. And he didn't say how he was going to address these disparities. He just said, hey, you can be sure that I'll address these disparities. And then why it's problematic is because when you look at his Medicare for All plan, for instance, or his tax plan, they're surprisingly detailed. And it's like he did this Klan for Black America, or he addressed black issues performatively. And so we had to subtract from him for that. And I think it jibes with his overall tenor during this campaign, where he kinds of casts racial disparities as a simple problem of economics. And while race and economics are inextricably intertwined, I don't think they're the same thing, right? You have to be intentional about confronting racial disparities outside of economics, because as we know, when the economy gets better, you know, every boat rises, but black people's still are below the level of white, you know, economic power and wealth and income. You know, we see the disparities all the time. And I think that Bernie Sanders' plan shows a lack of detail on how he specifically wants to fix and confront these problems.
If Bernie Sanders' policy proposals, and maybe we could say his worldview, if they are inclusive of black people but not for black people, is that necessarily a deal breaker?
I guess it depends on your perspective, right? If you're black, and it could be a deal breaker, right? If you've experienced extreme levels of inequality, or if you've seen it and have lived through it personally, then it might be a deal breaker. There are people, right, who are, for instance, black students who are suffering from overwhelming student debt, who love his plan to cancel debt. There are people who, you know, attend, you know, underfunded, predominantly white colleges, who would love to see him erase income inequality. So I guess it depends on your lived experience and your perspective.
We were talking with a Democratic consultant from Michigan, Adrian Hemond, who was pointing out this fact that Senator Sanders has really had a huge year in Michigan in 2016, but has not picked up substantial support in African-American communities. Let's listen to this clip.
African-American voters in general, we have not been Senator Sanders' base of support. You know, he's done really, really well with Latino voters, and he's done really, really well with younger voters, but he's had some difficulty cracking into the black community in a significant way. I don't see much difference in that in the primary right now, I think because they're pretty confident they can win Michigan without changing their strategy too much, and I think they're right about that. For the general election, it's going to need to be an area of focus. You know, Bernie talked about this a second ago, that, you know, the president won Michigan by about 10,000 votes in 2016. Coincidentally, turnout in the city of Detroit was down by about 10,000 votes in 2016.
Michael Harriet, I wonder if you agree with what was put out there, that there may be key states that Bernie Sanders might win, even if he doesn't change his campaign strategy with the black community in 2016.
It is a possibility, and the possibility isn't because of anything that Bernie has done right. It is because that black voters are keenly aware that they want to remove Trump out of office, right? So it's not like even in this election, in the primary election, it's not as much a referendum on which candidate is best for a lot of black voters. It is which candidate can beat Trump. Right. So that's the political calculus that a lot of black voters and a lot of voters, period, are making. Right. So there might be the chance that Bernie could succeed without winning the black vote in the primaries. But he's going to have to, in the general election, whoever the candidate is, find a way to motivate black voters to get out beyond just hating Trump.
As you look at the narrowing field and you think about how the front runners might be considering their choices for vice president, is there anyone out there who you think would make an intriguing choice, either people who were declared candidates in the presidential race and dropped out, or just other folks who are out there on the national scene that you think might bolster a front runner's case at this point?
So I think the most intriguing prospect for vice president is Stacey Abrams. I think you can look at how she increased turnout and participation in Georgia, which is a red state, and almost turned that state purple and almost won her candidate. Some people say, you know, if it wasn't for shenanigans, then she might have won. So the idea of turning Georgia blue is intriguing, not only because of the possibility of her being the first black female vice president. But because Georgia has an important Senate race, and so, you know, increased black voter turnout and increased participation could possibly change that Senate seat. And she's young. She has a bright political future. And I think everyone is kind of waiting to see what she's going to do. And so, you know, she would make the most intriguing choice. You look at Andrew Gillum in Florida. You know, whoever the candidate is, whoever the nominee is going to really need those delegates and those electoral votes out of Florida. And we saw how he overperformed in Florida in the 2018 midterm. So he makes an intriguing candidate. Kamala Harris, a senator, young, vibrant, skilled legislator. She makes an intriguing choice. There are quite a few viable and intriguing candidates for vice president.
Michael, maybe my political memory just isn't that long, but I feel like something has happened in the last couple of cycles where the white mainstream of the Democratic Party is just talking in maybe starting to have a different understanding about what the black vote means and about what it means to put forward a candidate that represents America and that appeals to America. I mean, these things can be cyclical, but do you think something different is happening this year?
I think the last election, the 2018 elections, taught them what happens when you just take the black vote for granted, when you just say, look, they turned out in 2008, they turned out in 2012. They'll turn out in 2016, right? They're going to vote Democratic. So, like, that's not who we need to focus on. I think, you know, the failure of that is how Trump got into the White House. And I think the other thing is the 2018 midterm showed the party what could happen if black voters are energized, right? And how that can reverberate throughout the ticket. Like when we talk about the 2020 elections, we usually focus on the presidential candidate. And the most important part of this is that they know, right? Like we know who most white voters are going to vote for. Most white voters are going to vote for Trump. So the only way to defeat them is with an energized and passionate base. And the base of the Democratic Party is black voters.
Michael Harriott, thank you so much for all the work you put into just this one article. And I'm looking forward to seeing the other stuff that you're working on for this year.
Thank you for having me.